Welcome to the Deep Roots at Home podcast. For those of you new here, the Deep Roots at Home website was founded by Jackie in 2011. As a retired RN, longtime homeschooler, past Lyme sufferer with a love of preventative natural medicinals, Jackie has encouraged women for years now. Our desire is to spread truth and important information during these recent deceptive times, as well as the practicals of homemaking and all things beautiful. Whether you are listening in the car, while you're making dinner for your children, or sitting with a relaxing cup of tea, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Deep Roots at Home podcast. I am so excited and glad to be here today with you. Today we have a special guest, Kelly Crawford. Many of you may have already heard about Kelly through her website, Generation Cedar. Kelly is a personal friend of mine, and I'm super excited to have her here today. She and her husband, Aaron, live on a farm in the Deep South, enjoying a mostly quiet life with seven of their 11 children still at home. Kelly's been blogging, like I mentioned, since 2007, encouraging women in their roles as mothers and wives, and running several small businesses from home. She's also the author of several books and has been featured on radio and in magazines, and occasionally she speaks on topics of motherhood, home industry, and homeschooling. And today, we are specifically talking about the topic of relaxed homeschooling, and I'm just really excited to hear what Kelly has to say. I think many of you homeschool moms are going to really be blessed by our conversation today. So welcome to the podcast, Kelly.
Thanks, Jenny. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. Why don't we start out, just tell me a little bit, I mean, I gave the bio, but tell me a little bit more about who you are personally and your family and kind of how long have you been homeschooling and that type of stuff.
We started homeschooling, I think it's been 23 years now, because I have four grown children who are graduated and out of the home. So going on 23, 24 years, and I still have about 17 to go. So I've been doing this for a while. Before that, I taught high school English. And I think a lot of people hear that and think that that put me at an advantage to homeschool, but I don't really consider that to be the case. I feel like I had to do a lot of deschooling and deprogramming from, you know, the classroom model, because homeschooling is just so different. And I think that's where a lot of moms get hung up, because, you know, we have this narrative of the way we've always thought school should be. And so once we decide to homeschool, we just picture bringing the classroom into our homes, and it could be pretty disastrous. Mm-hmm. And so that process of deschooling over time is what really got me turned on to what I call the relaxed method of homeschooling, or some people call it a lifestyle of learning. I ended up writing a book about it, and I'll soon be releasing an e-course about it too. But I love the idea of relaxed homeschooling. And every now and then I speak on the topic, and I always get a lot of moms that are just really stressed about their homeschooling, but they don't really know how to implement the relaxed method either. But we've enjoyed it. It's worked well for our family, and I've had time now to see the proof of it, because I've had a couple that went on to college. And so.
So have you always done relaxed homeschooling?
No, in the very beginning, I came home and did, you know, tried to recreate a classroom, and that was a disaster. I just had one daughter in school at the time, and, it was silly even when I think about, cause I down to having a bulletin board hung up in her room. it was really funny, but, I would say I only did that a year. And then I thought, you know, this is not working. We've got to do something else. So I just started researching, and very influential in my thinking about education is John Taylor Gatto. And I don't know, a lot of people have heard of him. He was a retired veteran school teacher who came to believe that the way we did school in the classroom was really damaging to kids. And so I thought, well, if that's true, then I don't need to be trying to copy that at home. And so reading his writing has really given me a lot of confidence and courage to embrace this style of learning.
So how would you describe what relaxed homeschooling is?
I describe it as, I mentioned the phrase lifestyle of learning. So it has a lot of elements. For one thing, it's not a stop and start kind of thing. You know, we think of school start going from 8 to 3 and then we're out for the summer. But I try to think about, you know, an education is so much more than academics. And I think the biggest mistake we make is thinking that the academic side of school is the full education. And while actually the academics is only a tiny part of a full education. And so we have children that we're trying to educate the whole child. So it involves, you know, their character, their spiritual life, their everything that makes a person who they are. And so in a relaxed homeschooling, I think that God gave, he brought our kids to us with a natural curiosity and desire to learn. And what we need to do is just present them with the tools and the resources to do that. So I think it's just a lot simpler than we make it. I don't think it's a situation we've come to believe that we have to feed information to our kids because that's what we learn in the classroom. But when a child comes into the world already naturally curious, I mean, just you've got the example of kids that learn, every child that comes into the world learns a language by the time they're 2, 3 years old. And that is an innate thing that God gave to them. And that part of their nature is always there, curious and ready to learn the next thing. And all we need to do is provide a rich environment to feed that. So instead of being heavy on textbooks, we do more living books, as Charlotte Mason coined the term. So instead of a history textbook, we're going to read more biographies and we're going to have discussions. And so even though we have a rhythm to our day, we're not on a really, really strict, rigorous, formal academic schedule, if that makes sense.
So, in the term relaxed homeschooling, I have heard a lot about unschooling. How would that differ?
Well, for us personally, I'm not opposed 100% to the unschooling method, although there are some questions that I have had and a lot of people have had. The difference for us is I do require some degree of formal, you know, academics. And I think with the unschooling community, they do not, it's a 100% child-led kind of thing. So we do copy work. It's a very big part of our school day. I believe that copy work helps the whole entire language is can be summed up in, you know, copying other really great writing, penmanship, grammar, spelling, punctuation, all that stuff. And I gave an example to somebody the other day, but I worried a little bit about whether copy work would be adequate enough if I did have a child that, you know, wanted to go to college or what have you. But my daughter recently attended college for a couple of years and she made straight A's, and her professor asked if he could use her essay in as an example to the class. It was her very first essay she had ever written because I never required her to do that. And so that gave me a lot more confidence
And
in
she
our
did
copy
well.
work. She did very well. Yeah.
Wow. So she had never done an essay.
No.
Oh, wow.
So
So do you do regular math?
we do regular math. The difference in maybe our homeschooling and another is that I do not force my kids to continue in higher math if it becomes something that's just a huge obstacle. I have a couple of kids, maybe more than a couple, but I learned this early on with my son, who is a brilliant artist, but because he was so much that brained, he had a just really hard struggle with math and then just basic math even. And so I've learned from that we go as far as they want to go as far as they are able to go. And then if they don't want to do algebra 2, or it just becomes, you know, a terribly hard thing for them, or even algebra at all, we do basic algebra. At that point, we always, and I include this no matter how much math they do, but my high schoolers do Dave Ramsey's homeschooling foundations in finance, because I just believe I believe that if kids are going to be bent toward a STEM career, then they're naturally going to be bent toward enjoying math and being, you know, being right. good at math and that kind of thing. If they're not, I don't see the point in forcing that. There are other ways that they can learn problem solving skills and what have you. And what's going to really affect them more than anything in their adult life is how well they are able to manage their money. And, you know, do they have a good understanding of interest and, you know, all the things that surround finance that we struggle with as adults. And so I put a lot of emphasis on that. And the math thing, I just hold loosely, and I treat each child differently and just see where they're bent in that way.
Gotcha.
When it comes to vaccines, most mothers and fathers want to know facts, not others' opinions. Jackie wished she had known more facts when she went in for her first well baby visit. Because Jackie strongly promotes parental choice, she felt led to write a short treatise with personal facts. This vaccination ebook is pretty concise to allow you, the parent, to read, research into the studies she shares, and come up with your own decisions. Jackie's sincere desire is that you and your children thrive, and so she presents to you the vaccination ebook free of charge. Simply go to deeprootsathome.com/vital-info-ebook/. That's deeprootsathome.com/vital-info-ebook/.
So you'd say relaxed homeschooling is kind of a little bit in between the whole unschooling approach and the classroom approach.
Yeah, I would say it's in between. And one of the things that I also have just come to believe is very important is understanding the differences in our children and not measuring intelligence by academic performance. I think that's a huge thing that we do as a society. You know, like I mentioned earlier, my son, who just really struggled with math, but he's a genius in the arts. And so I think I'm trying to learn as a mom and trying to encourage other people to treat all of our kids' gifts as a form of intelligence. And so just because this one may not be as academic or like to read, but he may be an incredible mechanic, or this one may just be gifted in the arts, you know, whatever it is, learning to treat all of those as, you know, equal forms of intelligence has been a huge lesson for me.
Yeah, I've gone through something similar with my 8 children. My second born specifically was to the academics was like putting a square peg through a round hole. And it was he's, you know, in his mid-20s now. I remember in his high school just stressing over, you know, how was I going to get him through all the transcripts and all these things. And he learns, like you said, my dog just went off. He actually has turned out, like you mentioned, to be genius. He's running his own shop. He is incredibly successful. In his early 20s, he was doing things that 30-year-olds, you know, wow. are doing. But he was, if we hadn't been homeschooling, he would have probably been labeled all kinds of labels. His self-confidence would have been tanked.
Absolutely.
And he's absolutely thrived because of be given the ability to really reach for what he was gifted in. And right. I wonder, I called one of the heads of the homeschool groups that I was in. Mm-hmm. And I basically said to them, you know, how can I graduate my son in this type of situation? She told me, and I'm sure every state's a little bit different, but she basically told me in the state of South Carolina that the transcripts were only if my child was bound for college.
Uh-huh.
If I knew my child was not bound for college, that the 4 math and the 4 English and all these things that are required are not like legally they have to do them, but it's this is what you have to do to be able to get into college. And that if he was planning on immediately going into the workforce and not going to college, that I could graduate him at any time I wanted.
Right.
And that blew me away. Because I was so under this pressure.
And so many moms and parents are, like I said, we have this one way of doing things that we've always thought should be this way. But that's my passion, to try to help homeschooling parents come out from under that pressure and realize there's so much freedom in this, and we can relax about it. We can trust the process of what God has given them. And there's a huge thing to be said about children learn what they need to learn when they need to learn it. And we do that. I mean, if you think about how much you've learned in a particular thing as an adult because it was important or because you needed it. And so, it's not like, oh, if I don't teach them everything they need to learn in these short years, I'm going to ruin them for life. No, we're built to learn. And so we can take some of that pressure off ourselves as parents. It's not all on us. It's, they're gonna learn. They're gonna keep learning.
So, how did you handle transcripts for the college kids?
So I've got two or three, I guess, that had one had to have it for the military. And so I would take, for example, I mentioned the foundations in finance for Dave Ramsey. I put that down as a math. And so that counted as their senior math, and nobody questioned it. So honestly, I don't think anybody looks at the transcripts. I think you just have to turn it in. But what for literature, have they been reading their 4 years of high school? Yes, they have. You don't have to specify what literature. You just have to have a literature down. And so just being creative like that with the transcripts.
So would you count like the copy work for the grammar?
And then for science, I did put most of my kids through the I won't be able to recall the name because I'm trying to, but for anatomy, and we did several sciences: anatomy, zoology, astronomy. I can't think of the name. It's a really good curriculum, but I did some. That was probably one of the few formal textbook type that I did. So,
Apologia.
Apologia. Thank you.
I just know that's a super popular one. So, have you been able to obviously you've written this book and you talk about it on your blog. Tell me a little bit about your speaking engagements.
I've got one coming up, March 15th through 17th in Illinois. I think it's the Peoria Homeschooling Convention. I don't do regular speaking, but every now and then it's probably been 3 or 4 years since I did any. But I'll speak on usually always the topic of relaxed homeschooling, and then I have several other topics that I talk about too, which people can find on the blog if they want to. But this the relaxed homeschooling has been the most popular topic thus far. So I think, and if people, doesn't matter if I do that because it's not going to be seen, but I have the book Think Outside the Classroom is where I lay out just kind of practically our approach to relaxed homeschooling. If people want to, read a little bit more about that, I'm going to thumb through just to give you in the book. I talk about building the framework, which is from the very beginning. Like I said, we have to kind of deprogram, what we're used to thinking about, and really grasping what is an education. We have to get down to answering and defining that for your family. What are the goals? What are your objectives? And then I go into talking about the lifestyle of learning, the natural curiosity that God gave children, and how we can trust that. It's funny because every mom has homeschooled since her child was born. And then they turn 5 and she panics. And so it's really something that if I can try to get across to parents that you've already been doing this, so you're going to be fine. I talk about giving kids the importance of solitude and giving kids time to think and reflect. And that's hard in our day of, you know, over stimulation from all the technology. But there's a lot to be said about boredom as a catalyst for kids. And so I talk about, you know, if you have to just be very deliberate in taking away devices for this much time a day, do it, because it's just important. And we talk about, I talk in the book, how we practically implement our objectives, teach the fear of the Lord. We want to teach them to be self-learners. We want them to cultivate their thinking. So we want to ask questions and have them learn how to defend their faith and their opinions. And then we want them to be effective communicators. We want them to have a good grasp of numbers. And then we want them to be cultured to some degree. And so just those kind of bedrock, for our family, those are kind of bedrock things that we want to implement. So, and then I've got a lot of practical ideas in the book too about how we do it.
Right. So if they go to your blog, Generation Cedar, they can find that book there?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I read or heard somewhere somebody say that everything that you need to learn in school, you can learn in about 2 years.
Yeah. I heard that just recently.
Yeah.
I read that. Uh-huh.
That's really crazy.
I know.
You know, specifically for me, one of my pet peeves is grammar. I just feel like, just the nuances. And I know it's important for good writing. I know it's important for good communication.
Mm-hmm.
But the repetitiveness that we put our kids through from third grade to 12th grade.
It's ridiculous.
It seems so crazy, you know? And I know that the Blue Dorns used to talk about things that your child needs to learn before 10, was it? Or are you familiar with the Blue Dorns?
I am a little bit, yeah.
I remember something about, you know, like the things that we panic because our 7-year-old boys are not learning, you know, a lot of things, or even our 8-year-old boys are still struggling to read or whatever, but the things that they can learn from 10 on being so incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Brains are developed more.
It is no secret that Jackie loves TRS, but some have asked exactly what is TRS? TRS is a nanozeolite spray that facilitates some amazing things. TRS does not heal anything, but it gently clears the body of toxins and heavy metals, so the body can heal itself exactly as God designed it to do. Why not get to the root cause instead of just applying Band-Aids? Excellent supplements and individual remedies can help, but they cannot help as much until you remove the root source of inflammation and disease. Detoxing toxins and metals is foundational to good health. TRS is safe for the elderly and for children as well. For more information, go to www.deeprootsathome.com/TRS.
Why do we have such a hard time letting go? Because, I mean, even me, I was homeschooled.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught my kids at home. But it is still, I feel the mom guilt. Like, mm-hmm. It is still there. Why can we not pull away from these expectations that our society's put on us?
It is difficult. I mean, I still struggle with it, even though I am much better now than I used to be. But there's just all the comparison, the pressure. For some people, they have relatives that will drill their kids. And I can't imagine how that's just a lot of pressure. So, you know, for some of it, some people, it is real in that way. But then the other part is just, again, we are just so ingrained, I guess, with what we, and it's interesting that you say that since you were homeschooled, but yet you still struggle with the pressure from probably people or whatever. But talking about the grammar stuff, that's one of the things I talk about when I speak on this topic is I do not require my kids. I started out just not requiring them to, you know, diagram sentences and things like that. But now we've scaled all of that back until now it's pretty much just copy work. And like I said, it seems to be working very well. And, you know, when little kids start grammar, they have them, for example, you know, how do you make a word plural by adding an S? The kid's been doing that already since he was 3 years old.
Right.
It's so silly to me. And I do think there's a huge element of the public education that just they needed babysitters for all the working parents. And so they had to make the day last. And in
Yeah.
order for the day to last, they had to come up with all of these
Rules
rules
and
and activities and things to do. And so that's my personal opinion. It's
yeah.
just a busy work that we could cut out.
I mean, how many times do I use the phrase past participle
Yeah.
in my regular daily life, you know?
And that's another challenge in my talk. I say, raise your hand if you can tell me what a, like you said, past participle, a gerund, a whatever. Raise your hand if you can tell me, define that on the spot. Well, you can't, most people can't, but they know how to use language.
Or they know how because of practical use.
And that's the point.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So, can you give me a brief, I know it could get tedious and long, could you give me a brief rundown of what a particular day might look like for you?
Sure. I guard morning time very carefully because we always start off the day after the kids have had breakfast. We do our Bible reading, as many as are home. Now I'm running into having a lot of older kids that go to work and things like that. But we do Bible reading and then we keep a read aloud going. This might be we've read through the Chronicle series of Narnia. Right now we're reading a biography. I think it's George Mueller. So we'll do Bible reading and that. And there's another book I'd recommend. It's called Morning Time, A Liturgy of Love, maybe. But she talks about if you can guard that morning time, you can get a lot in. You can maybe use that time to memorize, go over a poem that you want your kids to memorize, or memorize scripture, or just spend time in conversation. Because once they get scattered, it's hard to kind of get that back. So after our morning time, we do their reading. Then each child goes off to do their chores, and everybody has a chore. And after chores, they all do their independent work. And so each one has a set of these are your books for the year. This is your math book. These are your reading books, and this is your copy work. It's a very simple, outline. And it's a hodgepodge. I don't use any one particular. We have a pretty large library. So each year I just kind of go through and pick out what I would like each child to go through, the books that I want him to read. And that's it. And yeah, it only takes him a couple hours maybe to do that. And if you have kids that are really bent in another, like when my artist son was here, I made that part of his curriculum. I would give, let him use some of his school time to study graphic design or just to practice or, whatever like that. So remembering that your child's education is not just their schoolwork, it's not just their books, it's not just, it can encompass so much more and make allowing time for that.
So, I'm assuming then the afternoons they're free for to pursue whatever
Yes.
interest they have, lots of free playtime, things like that for
Yes.
curiosity and learning. Yeah, I was just talking the other day about the importance of play. We don't give our kids enough time, like you mentioned. So how do you handle specifically the whole, like my child, I know would spend all day on
Device.
his devices in bed. How have you handled that?
Well, so that our
Clutch creativity completely.
Exactly. It's a challenge. I mean, I don't have an easy answer. We have three younger boys, my last three, and they have one of their relatives bought them a play game station for Christmas, and they're not allowed to play that until weekends. That's the only way, because if they even think there's a chance, then they're just kind of hovering, waiting. So we tell them you can play that on Friday nights, starting Friday nights, and then some on Saturday and Sunday. And they don't have their own devices yet, so they'll try to steal mine. That's what we deal with now. But and it's hard too because as you homeschool, they have friends that they might want to talk to in the week, so they want to FaceTime their friends or text their friends. So we just try to be strategic about, hey, you've had enough time, put all the devices away. I don't want you back on until this hour or this day. So that's how we
Yeah, I
kind
know for us, it creeps so slowly in.
of.
It creeps in until you realize they are spending so much time.
Yep.
And we have in the past, we'll just do media fasts and we'll say, okay, for this week, there is nothing. You know, and for the first couple of days, my kids are like, oh, I'm so bored. What do I do? And then their curiosity gets going and they're outside doing stuff and they're picking up stuff they haven't done in ages. And then actually being creative, and it's like, I really need to do this more often.
That's a great idea. Do you do it with all ages or just the younger ones?
Well, the situation I'm in now, I only homeschool my last child. But when I have a gap now, my youngest, let's see, let me explain this back. My number six is 18, and number seven is 12. I really only have now, after all these years, I really only have those two little boys. Because my older ones are working and they have a lot of things that they do now because they're grown, you know. So I really only have but yeah, I mean, I say whoever is, you know, the whoever is still in the in younger, whoever is still not working would do that media fest. And just say nothing for this week or whatever. I think, you know, and even my ones that are still in school, like we for specific reasons have my 12-year-old in a Christian school right now. So I'm just homeschooling my other one. But when my 12-year-old is home in the summer, we'll do these randomly, just like you've had way too much time on devices. So we're declaring these days media free.
That's good. And you almost have to do that. And I know there are controls that can be set on some devices that turn it on and off. We've not been great about setting those. Another thing too is we don't give our kids devices. And first of all, they have to be old enough to buy their own phone and pay for their plan. And so that's usually not till around 15 or 16. So that helps too. So of course, like I said, they steal mine and look at stuff. But anyway, it is one of the greatest challenges I think parents face right now.
It is, you know, my parents didn't have that. But what I find is they're so addicted that you turn off one and they go to the next one. And so that's why we have to say all media, because if you know, take away a phone, okay, they'll get on the Xbox. Well, if you turn off the Xbox, they'll get on the TV. Well, if you take away the TV, like, you know, it's just like you
The
almost
next thing.
anything that's electronic is gone. Because they it's like an addiction, they have to have it.
It is. It's kind of scary, honestly, but that's the world we live in, so we have to just fight it the best we know how.
And our kids, my older kids remember times without media or without the phones.
And they talk about, oh, we played in the woods and built forts, and it was the best thing ever.
But now the next generation won't remember anything before.
And sometimes, especially with my little boys, I just kick them out of the house. I just say, go outside and be boys. Go, stay outside.
Well, this has been wonderful. Is there anything specific that you would say? Let's say there's a homeschool mom right now that's listening to this and she's just been laboring under this status quo, and she, you know, loves the idea of what you're saying, but she's still so afraid to break free from that. Is there anything you would say to that mom?
I would tell her, there was a book from John Taylor Gatto, I mentioned him, that was so eye-opening and life-changing for me in the way that it helped me come to understand the brainwashing that we had had about the way students learn or whatever. And it's a book from him called A Different Kind of Teacher. I would tell her to read that book, and she would probably, it's one you can't put down. It's hard to put down. It's just an eye-opening, life-changing kind of perspective from a man with a lot of credential, and a lot of experience. And so reading that book helped me a lot to break free from the stress and the guilt of and the fear. We are so fearful. What if I do it wrong? What if I and we just don't trust our kids. We don't trust what God has given them in their innate sense of curiosity and ability to learn. And just, you know, going over, reading the people that have written about this is what will give her the confidence. That's what I would tell a mom, I think.
Wonderful. Okay.
That's and great. I have lots of articles on this type of thing. If you don't want to read a whole book, you be sure to jump over at Generation Cedar, because I've written there for 17 years. So there's a ton of stuff.
Yeah. I love your blog. It's so encouraging.
Thank you.
Well, this has been great. I know you're so busy, and I really appreciate the time that you've given us today. And I'm hoping this will just be a real encouragement shot in the arm for some of our moms that maybe are laboring under these expectations. Maybe they're feeling burnt out because they're just, you know, trying to do it all, trying to do what was never required of us by the Lord, you know, to do with our children. So, I just really, really, really appreciate this. Thank you so much, Kelly.
Well, I appreciate you asking me to be on. I enjoyed it very much.
Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Roots at Home podcast. We pray it has encouraged you in your walk with the Lord and as you serve your family. Could you do us a favor? If this has blessed you, could you help us spread the word by liking and sharing this podcast with your friends? And don't forget, we have lots of great links in the show notes that go along with today's podcast. See you next time.